paying passes on board, taking them out to sea and hunting the submarine, mm-hmm. and then returning them to store about 3 days later. And there were two of us, sea training officers, and we took week and week about, 1 week on in the bay of the school crosses there, and the next week in the school itself. Mm-hmm. It was in there for a very pleasant life.
I guess it would. And I guess you saw a lot of faces go through your school too.
Yes, indeed.
And this would have been the time when the Corvettes were coming off the assembly line.
They were coming off right enough, so this time, yes.
Yeah, so you really needed the men going through and learning
yes.
the processes. Because by this time, it would be 1942 by this time, I guess.
1942, that's right.
They would have been, the U-boats would have been using the pack tactics, wouldn't they?
Yes. This is one of the worst periods for U-boat success.
Yeah. Was there any thought of getting you an expert on anti-submarine tactics out of the school and into combat?
No, most of the training for combat was done ashore, and then you just, when you got to sea, you tried to apply the principles that you'd learned.
Mm-hmm.
But groups were beginning to become permanent groups now, which made them much more efficient as escorts, as mm-hmm. individual escorts. So if you sailed with the same people 3 or 4 times running, you soon got to know their capabilities and working out tactics together and so forth.
That is teamwork.
See, when the ship got in, there were always training classes to go to shoreside of the latest information to deal out and so forth.
How long were you at this training at Margaret Bay? At St.
Margaret? Well, St. Margaret's Bay, yes. Till about June of that year, 42, and then the whole thing was packed up and sent up to Pictou on the north coast of Nova Scotia, facing the Gulf of St. Lawrence. The only unfortunate thing about this was that the temperature grades were such that you could never find a submarine which had died if it went below 30 feet.
Really?
The chap who had suggested that the Pictou was an ideal training ground hadn't really investigated this, so these poor classes used to come up with wretched chaps to go to sea day after day, mm-hmm. hoping for a thing, and getting absolutely nothing except
what had it been changed in the first place? Just at the whim of some fellow who thought this might be a better place?
Yes, it was a better place. It was more sheltered and away from things.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as good.
It was just hopeless, really. Mm-hmm. And we only stayed there for the balance of that summer. And then we went back to Margaret's Bay again.
Mm-hmm. What sort of reaction did Canada have, at least, did you read into the reaction of Dieppe in August of 1942? Do you remember that at all?
I don't think, I'm ashamed to say, it made very much impression on me at the time.
Mm.
Because, I don't know, I haven't seen, that I can think of, any newspaper article describing, contemporary newspaper article describing the EDF operation.
Did you not read newspapers at the time?
Yes, but how much were they allowed to publish at the time? That's what I don't remember. It was probably glossed over to a certain extent.
Such that any feelings you would have had at the time would have been as a result of, say, a little bit of war propaganda.
Yes.
That 5,000 Canadians storm upon the beach and they don't talk about the casualties involved.
Right.
So you can't get a clear and accurate picture. What did you do after Pictou?
After Pictou, I went back to Halifax. And the submarine school, in submarine school, was then preparing to move over to Cornwallis, where the base was being completed,
mm-hmm.
and where all new entry training was going to be concentrated.
What rank did you have at this time?
I was now a lieutenant commander. Because Victor, I had been in charge of the whole operation up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a half strike reward, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Was it temporary acting?
Temporary acting lieutenant commander. RCNDR.
This is how they distinguished you from the rest, I suppose, then.
Yeah.
Temporary acting.
Yeah.
So you went to Cornwallis, and what precisely?
No, I didn't go to Cornwallis. The school moved to Cornwallis.
Oh, I see.
But I was tagged by Jimmy Hibbert, now Admiral Hibbert, at that time captain, to set up the syllabus for a commanding officer's course and a tactical table in Halifax, because
mm-hmm.
Hibbert was then, I think, captain in charge of training. So with the assistance of a professional seaman called DuPont, he used to be in the Queen Bermuda in his younger days. We started off on preparing the syllabus, first of all, for people to take the command course, and then to set up and run the tactical table, which took me all my time.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a tactical floor about the size of this room, and on which we worked out theoretical convoy battles. It's all very well done. I think it did. It was helpful training.
Mm-hmm. How greatly had the Americans overshadowed the Canadian effort in convoys? That they had taken over a great deal of the strategical area away from the Canadians, hadn't they at this time?
Yes, I think they had. I think the Americans were largely responsible for any convoys which were crossing
the
Atlantic, yes. South of, shall we say, 40, latitude 40.
Mm-hmm. How were the relations with the Americans that you were in contact with? Did you work well with them?
I think reasonably well. I didn't personally come in touch with many of them at that period of time, because if I wasn't working with Canadian ships, I was in the Royal Navy ship.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you being English, there would be no problem there. Would
no problem there, no.
No.
The problem I had was exercise intact, because there was one occasion I was staff officer to an escort group, and my commanding officer was an Englishman who had been in the Orient Line, professional seaman, and he was traveling as senior officer in a ship which was run by a Canadian officer, ex-mounted policeman, and he just couldn't stand this English chap. But I had to try and keep the peace between them.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of talked to each other through me. Right?
Did you like this job as mediator between the two?
Not particularly. Probably very good for me.
Mm-hmm. Could have been good training to become a diplomat.
Yeah.
But you survived.
Yeah. So to complete my story, after the tactical table had been set up and I was working it, I was due for some leave in July.
This would be 1943?
43. And I had just got down to a little place below Liverpool, Nova Scotia, where we were. My wife had got a cottage, when I got a signal saying report to St. John's, Newfoundland, staff officer, escort group 5. So off I went, and the ship I joined then was a Royal Navy ship called Nene, N-E-N-E.
What kind of ship was it?
She was a frigate.
It was
a nice comfortable change from all that work. Yes, frigates are good ships, I think. And so I was there with an RN crew, and I was a Canadian on board. This is useful because I could interpret the other members of the group, too, my senior officer. The other members of the group at that time were mostly corvette officers, people who had been in the volunteer reserve and were now running corvettes.
And you could interpret it for the...
I could interpret the senior officer to them and then the senior officer.
So you're back to the role of mediator again.
Yes. So that's a very interesting job, because this particular escort group was what they called a support group, and you were switched from convoy to convoy according to where the main concentrations of U-boats were.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would they determine where U-boats would be, from ultra intelligence and through aircraft?
Yes, but every day, every afternoon, we got from Admiralty in London the positions of U-boats which were liable to be in our area.
Mm-hmm.
A remarkably efficient organization.
Did you know then anything at all about Ultra?
No.
Have you read much about it lately? Or since?
No. I've read something about it somewhere. But
Well, from what I've read, the Navy got the Admiralty got a great deal of its information from Ultra.
Yes.
And Churchill used it, I think, in the Battle of the Atlantic more so than anywhere else, because
mm-hmm.
of the importance of getting the shipping across.
Yes.
Yeah. But the intelligence reports were very accurate, weren't they?
Pretty good, yes. Yeah. You get these intimidating reports saying, there are six submarines in your area between latitude 70, 11, 70. And then the senior officer of the escort, or the convoy,
mm-hmm.
Commodore of the convoy, can decide whether to alter course or stand on or what the hell to do.
Mm-hmm.
And support forces are very welcome, because they've just about doubled the escort on any convoy. We've had over about five or six ships in our support group.
And they must have been fairly fast as well.
Yes.
Because if they were corvettes, they couldn't move from place to place.
We were gradually getting frigates to replace corvette.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we went up to Murmansk in April, there were, I think, five of us, all Canadian ships now.
Mm-hmm. Were they tribal class destroyers, or all
No,
frigates?
These are frigates.
Mm-hmm.
All frigates.
Were they RN ships, manned by Canadians, or were they RCN ships?
The frigates?
Yeah.
Well, they were RCN ships, built in Canada, manned in Canada. An enormous number of them, it turned out.
Mm-hmm. And they were good ships, were they?
I think so, yes, excellent for the job. They were just fast enough, about 18-19 knots required, and comfortable enough to be livable.
Mm-hmm.
No trouble was the quarter decks were nearly always awash, and that's where the depth charges were.
Yeah.
So we get used to the detail of that sort.
And would you be doing the Halifax Londonderry run?
Basically, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But switching, as I say, from one convoy to another, not doing a straight run across.
It's going where you've been needed that time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your U-boat experience in the support group. I take it that you did see some...
Yeah, we sank two.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
When were you assigned to ASPIC? Like, you were liaison?
I wasn't the ASPIC officer on board. There was a chap who was the ASPIC officer. I was the general staff officer.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which meant what, in terms of in action, where would your station be?
Up on the bridge to advise the commanding officer on anything he wanted to know.
So he would ask, you wouldn't volunteer information to him?
I could do,
mm-hmm.
but he would probably ask me.
I guess it wouldn't be appreciated that... a junior temporary acting officer giving information to a regular naval officer. No. Tell me about the two sinkings.
Well, no. That's what occurred after we had been down the coast of Spain somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Off the Bay of Biscay.
Off the Bay of Biscay. And, we had had the first glider bomb attack on our group, because we were too close into it, because then too many people with binoculars saying, look, some chap wandering around out there, better do something about them. And after sustaining the attack without any particular damage, we were luckier than the next lot. The Athabascan got hit 2 days later in the same place. On the way north, anyway, with this convoy, we joined. We picked up an echo at night of a U-boat on the surface. So we fired off some star shells and some armor-piercing shell at her, and naturally she died. And we had a pretty good idea where she was and what direction she was headed in. So after searching around, we picked her up on the Aztec. And we did about 3 rounds at her. Mm-hmm. And the third round blew out to the surface.
And then?
Yeah, there she was going round and round in a circle. And everybody firing everything he could at her. I think we were more in danger from the other ships from coming up to help than from the U-boat gunfire. And finally she just up and ended and down she went.
And that was it? She didn't come back up?
No. That's the end of her. We picked up survivors.
Were there many survivors from that ship?
I should think, yes, that's the fact. 40 or so. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any personal contact with these prisoners?
There was only one, I can remember, coming into the wardroom. There was one officer prisoner, mm-hmm. So he was in the wardroom. And there was a self-attendant engineer who was supposed to keep an eye on him. Mm-hmm. He was given a revolver. I remember coming into the wardroom one day to find the self-attendant fast asleep, and his prisoner sitting beside him examining the revolver.
What did you do when you saw this scene?
No, to save it, disarm. Disarm this chap and take the revolver away from the guard.
Did you find him to be a fanatical type?
No, he wasn't. He was a pretty reasonable chap. I don't speak German, so I don't. Didn't have much conversation with him, mm-hmm. But
he wasn't.
I think
he
was probably very happy to be safe and sound in a frigate and so on.
Being down
mm-hmm.
deep in the
yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about the other time you?
Then the second one, we were with Waskasoo, and again it was nighttime, and she picked up an echo, which she was sure was a submarine, mm-hmm. and. We listened to it on our set and just couldn't get anything sharp. Actually, I think our set had been damaged. That's the reason why. Anyway, whether or not we told Boscoe to go ahead and attack, anyway, and we would stand off and watch what went on. So she did, and after about the second run in, once more, we had the satisfaction of seeing you both appear on the surface. And then it was much the same as the other time. Everybody opened fire. And
did the Germans try and
get out? The Germans scuttled
out.
They opened the valve and let her go.
Did they try and return fire with her?
They did for a while, yes.
It must have been a lost cause even attempting that. Returning
yes.
fire.
Yes, that's give you a little satisfaction. Yeah. I suppose that you might. That's somebody who...
How are you feeling? Are you feeling tired at all?
No.
Because I must be off for the next little while.
Right.
It's getting around 4 o'clock.
Well, I think we probably talked a lot.
Yeah, I think we've accomplished quite a bit. Great.